Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you today, as usual. And don't forget that Jim is also the author of The Weed Agency, which is being released on June 3rd. You can pre-order your copies now. Our good martini today, Jim, and I don't know if we should circle this day in a red highlighter on the calendar or something, but a fantastic performance on the House floor by a House Democrat in response to yesterday's press conference by President Obama concerning the VA scandal. We devoted our entire podcast to it yesterday and how we were underwhelmed, to say the least, at the president's explanation of why it's happening and what he plans to do about it. Two different Georgia Democrats went to the House floor to call for the resignation of Veterans Affairs Secretary Eric Shinseki. One was John Barrow. The other was Congressman David Scott. Barrow, you might understand if you wanted to be politically cynical, because he always has a tough re-election fight. David Scott usually does not. And here's what he had to say. Very articulate denunciation, not only of the current VA performance, but also of the president's performance at the press conference on Wednesday.
40 of our soldiers lost their lives, died because they couldn't get service. Our veterans are the heart and soul of this country. They are precious. And we must not turn our back upon them. I listened to the president today, and I was very disappointed with President Obama today. There was no urgency. Mr. President, we need urgency. We need you to roll up our sleeves and get into these hospitals.
Jim, that is so refreshing to hear a nonpartisan approach to an issue. And he also went on to say that he and the Republican chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee had gone to the VA facility in Atlanta and been directly lied to about the number of suicides there. So the cover-up is not just in the delays and so forth. The fact that there appears to be a pretty strong bipartisan consensus on this issue, at least for now, is very reassuring.
Absolute hats off to David Scott and also to John Barrow, because this probably wasn't easy to do or to say. They probably know that they're going to get some pushback from the White House and a lot of people saying, why are you doing this? You're just making the issue worse. And David Scott and John Barrow in these cases have kind of recognized that, look, I think it was John F. Kennedy had said, you know, party loyalty asks a lot and sometimes it asks too much. In this case, the idea is to be able to say, one, that we take our time for this. Look, as far as we know, this is still going on. There are still veterans waiting for care. All of the data being sent back to Washington from these branch offices of the VA is falsified and is saying, no, no, we're doing fine. The wait lists are getting shorter. The backlog is getting smaller. When in fact, the opposite is the case. The president is right that this shouldn't be a partisan issue. Having said that, may very well turn into Congress versus the administration with a bipartisan agreement, including, you know, all the 30-some who voted for a piece of legislation in the House yesterday, calling for greater accountability and a better sense of firing people who've managed to screw things up over at the VA. The administration's default setting in these things is no, no, this isn't so bad. This isn't so bad. We're working fine. We're working on it. The problems have been here for a long time. We're making, you know, this very dry boilerplate that doesn't fit for this. And one person said, you know, I was arguing with on Twitter today where they said, well, they were papering over problems. No, it's not papering over. It is letting people die. My colleague Kevin Williamson used the phrase bureaucratic murder. Lindsey Graham was on Greta Van Susteren last night. He says, look, this isn't just a scandal. It is a federal crime to falsify VA records. And that is allegedly what these folks said are doing. And, you know, when there are 23 or 24 facilities that are accused of this, it's very hard to believe that these are all false accusations, that this is this nationwide conspiracy of veterans claiming it, and also former VA employees who are whistleblowers. This may be the straw that breaks the camel's back, in which congressional Democrats just say, we just can't stand by this, and we can't say Shinseki's doing an okay job. A couple of days ago, President Obama said that he had absolute faith and confidence in Eric Shinseki's ability to do the job. And I can come up with a very simple one-word response to that. Why? Why would you have faith in Shinseki after this has happened on his watch? So kudos to these two House Democrats. Hope they're joined by others, and hopefully we get to the bottom of this and there is real accountability, and this doesn't turn into the everybody forming a protective circle around the president and hoping the American public will move on in its attention span.
And just to clarify a point, we were trying to figure out the exact number of facilities yesterday. I suggested 8 or 9, which had been the report a number of days ago. Jim said it was closer to 18. Turns out it's more like 26, 27. So this number is not just an isolated incident in any way, shape, or form. On to even, well, I don't know if it's more depressing, but it's equally depressing news for our bad martini here. it appears as though the victory lap the administration was doing in the later stages of the 2012 campaign, saying that Al-Qaeda was on the run and essentially not a threat to America anymore, as most of us have figured out by now, is not true. It was proven during the campaign in Benghazi, but more and more it appears that the United States intelligence community and the White House are at loggerheads about what exactly the strength of Al-Qaeda is. The White House, of course, is trying to downplay it as a essential victory in the war on terrorism. James Comey, the new FBI director, came into office late last year saying that once he finally got a handle on the power of all these regional Al-Qaeda networks rather than the one centralized force we dealt with the last time he was at the Bureau, he was shocked at how strong these different groups are, and whether or not they're able to pose the same threat to our mainland is another story. But clearly, from what we see from Boko Haram to all sorts of other situations around the Middle East, North Africa, even Southeast Asia, Jim, it's pretty clear that the threat has not gone away. And in many ways, because it's got many more heads than it used to, it could be even more dangerous.
This is supremely depressing and unnerving news. There's always accusations of politicization of intelligence, and lawmakers like to see from the intelligence community, give me evidence that shows that my policies are working. And there were accusations that the Bush administration was selectively, they wanted to see that their policies were working and effective in dealing with Al-Qaeda and, making progress in Iraq and fronts like that. And so thus they really wanted to see, intelligence reports that said, yes, it's working the way we wanted it to. Sometimes the evidence pointed that way. Sometimes it doesn't. In the case of the Obama administration, which, oh, by the way, Obama accused Bush of politicizing intelligence and all that stuff. Now we have it where particularly, and the timing of this matters a great deal. And basically in 2012, the Obama administration really wanted to declare the war on terror had been won. But what's really striking about what we're learning today is just how sweeping the language they wanted to use. The statement is that the national intelligence estimate is kind of like, the intelligence community's best sense of what's going on. And they basically wanted to say that basically Al-Qaeda was no longer a direct threat to America. Now think about that. That's, here's an organization that is sworn to kill all of us unless we convert, unless we subject ourselves to their way of life. And no longer a direct threat. With that, what do you mean direct threat? It's kind of surprising. And as noted by Eli Lake's reporting, the Defense Intelligence Agency was like, no, that's not the case at all. So they kind of argue it's no longer posed a threat to the homeland. While I suppose we can argue that the Boston bombers were not necessarily members of Al-Qaeda, I think it's safe to say that jihadist-minded lunatics are still a threat. And certainly, kind of wonder how many degrees of separation they are from, if not Al-Qaeda, then from other, run-of-the-mill Islamist terrorists. And so we live in a world, and this is obviously right just before Benghazi. And of course, our accusation about, the suspicion surrounding Benghazi is that the administration had just announced at the Democratic Convention, we've got Al-Qaeda on the run, and then things are going very well. And of course, then, terrorists attack the facilities in Benghazi and kill our ambassador, kill three other Americans, and really get one of their best victories against us in the war on terror in the last couple of years. So, it was a protest over a video. It was nothing we could do about it. Nobody could see it. Nobody could have foreseen terror attacks coming on September 11th, which many of us are rather scoffing at. In this case, this reporting by Eli Lake is really disturbing because it basically indicates the administration really, really wants to declare victory on the war on terror, facts be damned. And I can't think of a more dangerous situation than to have the government of the United States willfully blind and basically telling itself and the public, no, we're safe now. We've won the war. Everything's fine, when it isn't. Because it kind of just reminds me of, that's got to be the way we were looking at the world in, say, September 10th, 2001. This sense that we walking around kind of obliviously to the gathering threat against us. And obviously, while Al-Qaeda has changed since 2001, and the good news is a lot more of them are dead, a lot more of them are in Gitmo, a lot more of them are rotting in prisons around the world, the movement and the various folks who are inspired by it and the various folks who want to be the next Osama bin Laden are still out there and potentially quite dangerous.
Very depressing, as you said. All right, quickly on to the third martini and some much-needed levity, although it's certainly annoying to a lot of people. Jim, we've obviously talked about two major problems going on in our country right now, the gathering threat of Al-Qaeda to various U.S. and allied interests around the world, if not the mainland. There's obviously the Veterans Administration fiasco. There's still many different problems with our economy and the healthcare sector and all this stuff. So The Senate Democrats, however, are on to the most important issue of the time. They have sent a letter to NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell saying, in the wake of the Donald Sterling racist comments with the Los Angeles Clippers, this is the best time for the league to formally endorse a change in the mascot of the Washington-based football team. Nowhere in the letter could they even dare to lower themselves to mentioning the word Redskins, which is actually the name of the team. They've decided that the Redskins and Daniel Snyder, the owner, are on the wrong side of history. 50 U.S. senators, all Democrats, signed this. The only ones that didn't, not surprisingly, the two Democratic senators from Virginia, where there are a lot of Redskin fans. Mark Pryor, who I'm sure doesn't want to have anything to do with this during a tough re-election. Joe Donnelly of Indiana and Joe Manchin of West Virginia. So, Jim, good to see that Harry Reid is leading the Senate in a way that's really addressing the most pressing problems in our country.
Hail to the somebody. It's like Voldemort, that if you say the name, bad things happen. So you're not even allowed to say the word Redskins. Every time you say the word Redskins aloud, the non-Native American, Native American in the recycling ad, you know, tries another tier. There are two things that really jump out about this. One, as you said, the idea that 50 of these guys took the time out to sign this letter, arguing that this is something worth federal government's attention, that this is their business, this is something they should weigh in on, that this is something that the U.S. Congress should be spending some time and effort upon. But then the second thing, you talk about burying the lead. I'm just going to read one sentence from this letter to you, Greg, and I want to see what jumps out at you. We believe that they're talking about the Sterling controversy, and they say, we believe this conversation is an opportunity for the NFL to take action to remove the racial slur from the name of one of its marquee franchises. Greg, what jumps out at you about that?
That the Redskins are a marquee franchise.
Yeah, really? They're terrible. They're 3-13. Shanahan goes out of town on a rail, and Dan Snyder feels like he's playing fantasy football, signing people long past their prime, and trades away all the draft picks and all that stuff. They get a Gruden, but it's the wrong Gruden, this coach. You know, this is a marquee franchise, you know? What do you want to call the Broncos and Seahawks and all the other teams that have actually been winning lately? So anyway, that's my little bit of Redskins bashing for the morning. A little bit of much needed levity. And just after, like, there's other problems, people, okay? The fact that the two guys who represent the area closest to the Redskins, well, I guess they probably had both Maryland senators, didn't they, Greg?
Yeah, but that's such a blue state. They know they can't get any trouble for that.
You know, if I were running against, you know, Mikulski, I'd make an issue of that. You know, they're probably a whole bunch of apolitical Redskins fans in Maryland who might be really bothered by this. That's my free tip of strategy to the Maryland Republican Party. Both of them, I hope, will listen to this.
Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you later.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Don't forget to pre-order The Weed Agency and join us on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.